Hello, and welcome to Deep and the Wild. I'm Melissa Hawks, and today I have Elora Ramirez joining me. Elora can be found on Instagram at Elora Nicole, and we take quite a journey in this conversation. We discuss beauty as resistance and as rebellion. We talk about learning to listen to our intuition and how sometimes our dreams actually tell us things that end up being true. And many, many more things. It's quite the journey, so I hope you'll enjoy. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome to the show, Elora Ramirez. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, of course. And Elora is someone who is an internet friend, but is also an in real life friend as well. So I'm really thankful for her. We met a long time ago. What it seems it's been like 7 years, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it really is.
And so much life has been lived. There are a lot of things I can tell you about Elora, but I would love for you to start off by just sharing what you want people to know about you and where they can find you on the internet if you want them to find you on the internet.
Okay. So my name is Elora Nicole Ramirez. I am Elora Nicole on all social media platforms, if you're looking for me. I primarily function on Instagram these days, but I am an author and story coach, and one of the things that I love to do is help people get that story out of their bones and into the world. Because I know that it can feel like a pretty heavy weight.
Yeah, absolutely. Elora has actually done some content editing for a few of my pieces, and her feedback is always so, so great and leads you into telling the deeper parts of the story. It's kind of the parts of the story that I call the jam. Like, you know, when you're eating a pastry and like the best part is the jam inside and you just want more of that. Yeah, that's how I think of it. So, well, I have a lot of things I'd love for us to talk about today. I know I said I wanted us to chat a little bit about creativity and some things like that. But actually, I kind of want to start somewhere else. I've been thinking a lot about the practice and the discipline of beauty. And I watch you do that in your life. I see that in what you share on social media and conversations that we've had. And I'd love to know like what that means to you. And we can start there.
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question. So when I was in college, I had a professor who always wore this pin, and it basically said like art will save the world or art saves the world. I can't remember the exact syntax, but the sentiment was basically there. And I always loved that idea of art and beauty being what drives us forward and how we can kind of rely on that to hold that dissonance that we feel whenever we see what is versus what could be. Yes. And especially since March, when I found myself suddenly working from home, and I'm a team manager during the day. I lead a team of people who have very human-like characteristics, you know, like we all do right now, right? Like anxiety, depression, fear, and being able to kind of circle back and rely on beauty and see beauty in my own life with my son or with my relationship with my husband or even just catching a storm outside on my birthday and recognizing the message of what that could be for me. It's a way that helps drive me forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I resonate with that so much. I know the pandemic just reiterated that for me as well. There's this quote by Elsie DeWolf, who was, she was like considered the mother of interior design, but she said, and I'm sure you've heard this before, she said, "I'm going to make everything around me beautiful and that will be my life." Mm-hmm. And I just wonder what that, if you remember that moment for you when you kind of made that choice, because I've watched you for a long time do that with your life, make it beautiful and work to be intentional about that. And I just wonder if there was, a catalyst for that.
Yes, I know the exact moment. It was probably about 10 years ago when I started trauma therapy, and I was in the midst of moving. My husband and I were moving from this house that we had lived in and loved, and had incredible experiences with, but it was time to move on. And so, as is the custom of moving, our stuff was everywhere. Boxes were everywhere. I just felt very chaotic internally and externally. And I was speaking with a friend during that time, and I was telling her that I felt really unmoored, that I just felt really detached. Of course, going through that trauma therapy, there was a lot of difficulty there because I was plumbing depths I didn't want to, but I needed to. And I felt like I couldn't grab onto anything. And so she told me that she actually spoke into me. She said, "Laura, one of the most important things for you is beauty. And of course you feel so dissonant right now because you have your life in boxes and you're still having to talk about this difficult point in your life and basically unraveling everything that you thought you knew about your life story, and your current story is up in the air. And so when you get to your new apartment, that's my challenge for you, is to find a room and make it your own so you at least have that anchor." And so from that point on, beauty became an anchor for me. And whenever we go into a new place, when we moved from that spot to our apartment, like our next apartment, and then even when we moved into this house, the very first room I tackled was my office and the space that I have, because then that place became my anchor, and it was a spot where I knew, I would feel at home.
I love that. Wow. Yeah, that and it resonates with me so deeply. Like I the fact that you were in the midst of trauma therapy, I wonder if that's where a lot of times our practice of beauty arises from, is from facing trauma and all of that. I remember for me, there was this moment in the midst of my therapy work that I was doing that I decided that to make my life beautiful. And it was almost an act of rebellion for me. Here I was facing all of this, really dark, heavy shit, and for me to take on something. And I remember like the first thing that I did, like you were saying, you made your office beautiful, right? The first thing that I did was I started buying myself flowers every week, and I didn't spend a lot of money. Like I maybe it was like $5 or $7 a bouquet or something like that. But I started doing that, and that was like the first act of practicing beauty just for me, which
Yeah, it
was.
is. It's a defiance because
It is.
your whole life up until that moment, you're told that you're nothing but a token. Or if you're not told that, that's how you're treated. And so if you're a token, you don't get those extra things, right? Like, and so by kind of claiming that ownership of yourself and your story and realizing what makes you happy, like I didn't even know my favorite flower until probably 5 years ago.
What's your
And
favorite flower?
peony.
Oh,
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
peonies.
And even just that realization, like I remember being such an emotional realization because I had never before even allowed myself that exploration.
Wow, that's so beautiful too. Man, I feel that. I feel that so much. I think along with you saying like we're a token and so we don't get those extra things, I also grew up in a culture where women were devoted. It was almost very southern, even though I grew up in the Chicago area, but where women were devoted to hospitality and they made their homes beautiful and they made their
like they were very hospitable in everything they did, and so they would have dinners, they would do all these things, and everything would be very beautiful. But it was never for them. It was always to be accommodating to other people. So you're right. Choosing to practice beauty just for ourselves is defiant. I love that. I love that. We talked a little bit about external beauty, how it manifests in our home or a flower that we love. But there's this other quote that I really love. It's from Frances Maes. Do you know Frances Maes, the writer?
I do not.
Under the Tuscan Sun.
Oh, okay.
So she
Yes.
wrote a whole series of travelogues about Italy, which obviously I'm obsessed with. But she said, cultivate interior life as though it were a garden sanctuary. Give away what you can and squander your love. And so when I think about beauty, I think about it obviously externally, what I can see, but also I've seen you cultivate beauty internally. And I wonder what that experience has been like for you, the practice of beauty when it's internalized.
That's an incredible question. I think first I had to do it externally before I could even process what internally meant. And for me to foster that atmosphere of beauty internally, it's being incredibly protective of what I and consume what I am consuming. And even just those moments that I begin to feel, even though my surroundings might be beautiful, even though I might have been taking care with my atmosphere that week, if I begin to feel that unmoored feeling again, usually it's because I've been focusing so much on disruption and chaos rather than beauty. And so I have to really take a few moments and focus on the good around me in that moment. And then only then can I kind of go even more inward and focus on where I've come from, like what I've been able to overcome, what I've been able to accomplish. And really, it's just being still and knowing, to borrow a phrase that we're familiar with because of our background. But really, like, there's just so much power in that statement of being still and knowing that what you have within you is enough to foster the beauty that is needed. And so, that to me, that was almost as revolutionary, if not more revolutionary, than seeking it out, because then I had to commit to the truth that I am beautiful and that I possess beauty and that I can create it. And almost it was almost like manifestation. Like when and I remember that was probably around the time that my word was wild for the year. That really led me on this path of like alchemy and magic and claiming my wildness and recognizing the power that I have within myself to move my own self forward.
I love that. You were as you were saying that, I just kind of had this thought about how we were talking about the external actions towards the practice of beauty and that leading towards an internal practice of beauty. And I think that external intention of having beauty in our life leads us into deeper love for self, right? I think of it as like whenever I set an intention, by setting that intention, by writing it down, by speaking it out, I am always consciously and unconsciously moving towards that, And by setting that intention of beauty in our life, I love hearing you talk about like how it helped you embrace your wildness and the beauty that's inside of you that's already there.
Yeah, it reminds me of the ocean, right?
Yes.
Like the ocean and the waves crashing against the shore. And I mean, you and I've had this conversation. Like Sunset Cliffs is one of my most favorite places in the
Yes.
world.
Right there.
And yeah. And so being able to like see your videos when you lived there was so healing for me because that place held such magic for me in that realization of the wildness and how you cannot contain the ocean. And yet that's just the surface of its beauty. There's still so much that can be explored.
Yeah, absolutely. I call that ocean therapy too, by the way.
Yes.
It
Yeah.
really is.
It's
It
very
really
real.
is. You know, you that recognizing your wildness and exploring that. I dated someone earlier this year and who was a writer and of course left me with a lot of words to remember. But one of the things he said to me that I will never forget, was your wildness is a gift. And yeah, I mean, I think both of us, I don't want to assume, but I know for me, I've experienced in both of like being raised in that sort of evangelical perspective of things. I was always called out for my wildness, even when I was trying so hard to behave. It was just there under the surface. I didn't know it, but I was always being told, like, you need to be tamed, you need someone who will tame you. All of those things. And to hear that your wildness is a gift was that was a gift in itself. How does that resonate with you? How does that make you feel when you hear that your wildness is a gift?
Oh, it definitely resonates. It makes me think of a family member who told me once that I had always had a rebellious spirit. And I remember when I read that, because it was in an email that was sent to me. And I had set some boundaries. For some context, I'd set some boundaries and sent them an email, and they responded like I knew that they probably would, but the words were still pretty harsh. But that phrase, like, you've always had a rebellious spirit, stuck out to me because in my mind at the time, the all that I could remember was being the good girl, like making sure I crossed all of my T's, dotted all of my I's, scared shitless of getting in trouble or being caught doing anything remotely rebellious. And so it seemed like such a contrast of my own memories. And now I look back on that phrase and I wonder, like, what did they see in me that that was just tampered, that was just, it was under the surface, as you said. But it was there. It was there.
Well, I just my experience of you, I feel like even over the past 7 years, I've had the opportunity to watch you uncover that what was considered rebellious, I think strength and knowing your own power and standing in that. And that's something that people fear. It's something especially that I think men can fear sometimes because it's different than the way they're taught to experience women. You were talking about, I want to take a quick detour back to something that you said a few minutes ago. You were talking about how that practice of beauty and during that time when you first started that, you were also exploring magic and alchemy and those ideas and manifesting and what that meant. What has that journey looked like for you? That kind of departure, in a sense, I don't know fully where you're at, but that departure from traditional Christianity, into exploring these other ideas.
For me, it has felt more true. It's felt more, or I should say, less contrived than the American Christianity that is so prevalent. Even reading books, gosh, I'm going to forget the author. I'm going to find it while we're talking. But I remember reading a book back in September about how our word is our wand. And it was series The entire series is based on that concept of being careful what you speak, because what you speak, as you said, those intentions that we set, are so, they happen. Like, it's what we speak, what we think, those intentions. It was Florence Scovel Shinn was the author, and she has like a complete set of books, and she uses scripture. Like, the entire series is based on scripture. And I'm sitting here listening to these series, and I remember having a conversation with my husband, like, I'm having this moment where, and I've had two of these moments with him where I have this realization, but this one was, I had this realization of, I wonder how much of the language that we grew up with around scripture and how to interpret it was based on a necessity of keeping us subservient to specific people rather than keeping us completely embracing the faith and what it could be. And it was just this moment of absolute clarity for me, like, oh shit, like, this could have changed so many things for me. And also putting a pin in that thought, and also saying, like, there's such a fine line too between manifestation and seeing your life as alchemy and that prosperity gospel belief. And what's difficult for me is that I have deep, deep roots in that type of mindset. I have family who have bought into it. And I grew up with, like, random prayer services breaking out at family gatherings and prayers for miracles and all these things. And it just always hit wrong in my spirit and in my gut. And I think that's why it was a different type of, it was like a telling the truth, but telling it slant. And when I kind of stumbled upon the more mystical side of things and seeing my faith as very much individualized and very much a way for me to practice the magic of manifestation through beauty and creating a better world and speaking the truth as I see it. It, yeah, as I said before, it just became more and more, it felt more and more true for me. And it's actually been probably the past year where I've been able to even explain it, but I had questions back, like, before you and I even met. That second moment that I was mentioning with Russ earlier was this moment of clarity, just random. We weren't talking about anything. We were just in the car. It was hot. And I remember looking at him and saying, you know, if we lived back in the Salem witch trials, you know, I'd probably be tried. And he was like, oh yeah, you would. It
I know
was
that.
just this, it was just this, like, realization of, like, I've had people tell me, like, I've had friends be like, are you psychic? Like, how'd you know that? Or, you know,
Yeah,
why
same.
th this is your intuition again, isn't it? And so, like, that's been something that's been on me. Like, people have labeled me that and called me that and seen that in me long before I started laying claim to what we can do and how we can create beauty through alchemy.
Oh man, that resonates with me so much. I think my art alone would probably have them burning me at the stake. So I get that. There were a couple things that you said that I wanted to sort of return to. One was that language, and you were talking about that, and that just resonated so deeply. I feel like there was a language of fear that we were taught, right? But also, I wanted to say, when you were talking about manifestation, I just read this really great thing the other day. You might have seen it. I can't remember who shared it, but they said manifestation without action is just a wish. And I really loved that because for me, like you were talking about, there's that whole prosperity gospel where it's like, name it and claim it. Okay, well, for me, manifestation looks like setting an intention and then moving towards that intention, like I said, both consciously and unconsciously, but it's continuing to do the work, not forcing something to happen, but continually aligning myself with a path that moves towards that, you know. So that
Yeah, faith without deeds is dead.
of course. God, it's so, you know what I love is like reinterpreting all the scriptures that were kind of like forced on us in a completely different way.
Yeah, and that's what that series of books did for me. Like I was sitting here listening to them, and you know, like when you listen to something and it's just that like that stamp of truth, like it just feels like the weight of it you can't deny. And I'm listening to this going, oh my word. Like I remember having glimpses of this type of stuff growing up, but for so much of what I was part of, it was very much that fear-based control.
I'm with you on that. I you were talking about that series of books that reinterpret scriptures. There is this book that I have by this woman named Danielle Dolsky, and it's called The Holy Wild. And she looks, I don't know for sure what her background is because she's just like a straight up hardcore witch now. But she takes script like Bible stories of women and then she retells them in this beautiful, powerful way, like these women who were demonized in scripture. And it's amazing. I really love that. One of the things I wanted to ask you know, you were talking about like having like being psychic in a sense, knowing things, having a, let's say, a highly evolved sense of intuition, right? I experienced that as well, and I was wondering how that shows itself in your dreams, or if it does. And by dreams, in this instance, I mean like dreams at night. If you want to share.
Yeah, no, it doesn't happen all the time, but it has happened for sure. And for me, it's often something that is confirming what I'm feeling internally when I'm awake. Okay, so this is one moment where it happened. So I had a dream a couple years ago that the dog we had at the time jumped out of the car window just randomly, like jumped out of the car window on the highway. And he wasn't hit. He wasn't like, n nothing bad happened to him as he jumped out of the car. But in my dream, I remember grieving because I was like, well, he's gone now. Gatsby's gone. His name is Gatsby. And I woke up, and a week later to the day, he was hit by a car. He ran out of our house, and there was a car speeding down our street. And it was a really traumatic experience because Russ saw the whole thing, and I was in the bathroom. And so all I heard were like his cries because our door was like wide open. And I'll never forget that moment of standing in our yard. And sure enough, this was right around the time that I was starting to wake up and starting to like pay attention to the fact that, hey, maybe there's something to these feelings that I have, or the way that my body tenses around certain people. But I remember standing in our front yard and like almost hyperventilating. It was really late at night and I'm crying, and the only thing I could say is my dream, my dream, my dream. And like just this realization of, holy shit, this is what that meant. Like this is, I had this foreboding in a sense. And so there's been other times as well, where my sister, who was pregnant. I had a dream that something bad happened during her pregnancy and giving birth. And so I had forgotten about that. And I had this anxiety about her giving birth, and I couldn't really place why. And so I really just took to praying about it. Like I was just like, I don't know what's going on here, but just protect her, give the doctors insight, let them know like exactly what to do. And when she was giving birth, I remember being in the hospital room like right before she started pushing, and she grabbed my hand and she was like, I do not want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And I was like, well, you've already done it twice, so you can do it again. And like just trying to like boost her morale in a way, but I think she was feeling something as well, and she had to go on oxygen during it. There was a few complications, but like it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But yeah, she like pushed through oxygen the entire time, and my mom was in there through the entire thing, and so she was impacted, of course, because she saw her girl go through this. And I remember when my mom pulled my sister and I aside, my middle sister, and told us like there were a few complications, but she's fine. The baby's fine. Like they just had to put Christina on oxygen because her blood pressure was dropping quickly. I like as soon as she said it, it hit me. Like it was that wave that hits you where like you feel it in your chest. And I looked at Blanche and I said, I knew this would happen. And she was like, what? And so I told her everything. And it didn't really hit me though until I got into the elevator to leave. And I just like started weeping. Like, and so it's whenever it does happen, it's always incredibly emotional to wake up and kind of in the moment realize what's really going on and like the specifics of how that is going to play out in life, because it never happens exactly right. Like it's never at least not for me, it's never a play by play. It's always just kind of a, hey, there's this thing, be looking for it. You know what to do now, and so it always shocks me though. Every time it happens, it always throws me for a loop.
I'm just I'm like sitting here trying not to cry because I like as you're saying this, I'm just I know this. Like I have so many stories that I could tell from my own experience about dreaming things and then they happen. And it feels, I don't know how you experience this if you feel the same way, but it's become in a sense almost frustrating because it's like, okay, I know something's gonna happen. There's nothing I can do to stop this, right?
Yeah. Well, you even had a dream about Russ and me with our adoption.
I just
And
reread that email.
yeah. Yeah. And I remember holding on to that when we were sure enough by ourselves on that island. Because if I remember correctly, like the premise was like we walked away with Jubal by ourselves or something. And we that was before he was born, and then it turned out that we were on this crazy journey through the adoption and watching it finalize and fighting for him essentially with his birth mother. And we were stuck on this island off the coast of North Carolina. We couldn't come home. And so yeah.
I mean, I remember that. So I call them my real dreams, right? I mean, okay, I have intense dreams just all the time. It's just the way my brain works. I have some thoughts about the chemistry of it all, but I may have like a dream of like a troll and a big magic key or something. It's like a cinematic miracle. But then I have these what I call real dreams, and I wake up and I'm like, this is a true thing. I had this dream one night, and this man had walked into this large event and started shooting people and killing them. And the next day, like I woke up, and that day was when later that day was when this shooting in Las Vegas at MGM happened. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, why would I have this dream? I can't do anything about it, you know? And there was another one where I woke up one night, I had been dreaming of fires, and I woke up with the taste of smoke in my mouth. And it was that day that the fires started in Northern California and consumed like a lot of Sonoma and like all the way down to the Santa Barbara area. And then there are some times when it happens about specific people. And so I'm trying just to not be frustrated by that, but I'm also on a journey to understand like why I experienced that as well, you know.
Of course.
So
Yeah.
because
Of
it's
course. We
great when
need to
it's
make
like,
meaning. Yeah.
yes, exactly. And it's great when it's a dream like I dreamed about you and Russ and Jubal. That's helpful to someone. It's not helpful when you dream like an entire forest going up in flames. Great.
Yeah, no, I'll never forget the night that my sister and I had the exact same dream. But it was like the polar opposite. So like I had a dream that there was a flood and nobody was paying attention to me. Like I could see the wave coming and I was turning around and telling people. I'm just realizing this is how I feel right now, currently in our society. But like, I was turning around and saying, like, this wave is coming. We have to prepare. Like, this isn't okay. We have to take cover, essentially. And I was able to like protect my family, but I had to watch the people who didn't listen to me, when the wave came. And my sister had the exact same dream, but it was with fire. And so it's that concept of like waking up and thinking, what the hell am I supposed to do with that?
I have this belief, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it, but I have this belief that the future isn't fixed, right? That every choice that we make, there's this, well, okay, in one of my Oracle decks, there is this card, and it's called the Myth of the Fractal Tree. And it talks about how there are endless ways that every point in our story can play out. And so in some other, you know, in like a multiverse theory, some version of us is making a different choice and making a different decision. I personally find that really comforting. There are some people who probably wouldn't. But for me, when I think about the future, I think, oh, this could divide into multiple different ways. So even if I have a dream about something and it feels like one of my real dreams, there's a chance that maybe it won't happen, you know, that maybe someone will make a different decision and things will go a little differently. I don't know. What about you? We kind of came from this sort of predestined background when it came to religion. So, how do you feel about that?
I feel like I have a mixed, like a both and type thing. Like because I believe that right now, what I'm doing, I'm supposed to be where I'm at right now. Like this is where I'm supposed to be. And in terms of the future, that's where it gets complicated because you want to believe in a set future. You want to believe in like the fact that
The right
something
way.
specific, yeah, the right way will always make it. But like, even in our current state, like, you want to believe that come November, things will look a lot different. But back in March, if any of us would have said that we'd be here in August, I think we'd kind of be like, wow, that's a long time. I don't think so. And so, but yet here we are. And so I think that there is absolutely an element of free will, where in terms of like language that we're familiar with, like people make their decisions and that impacts the course of events for the future. And same with me, like I could make a decision right now that would essentially take me out of that, timeline, as you were saying.
Right.
But I think maybe my belief is that there's so much about time that we don't realize
Yeah.
that it's broader and wider and has more depth than we ever imagined.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe more cyclical than we're willing to think about. I don't know. I mean, I know for me, I've definitely been experiencing the cyclical nature of things this past year specifically, things returning to my life that I never imagined would.
Yeah. I had a friend, we would always say time's a circle. Like that was kind of our thing. Like something would happen and we'd laugh it off by saying, well, you know, time's a circle. And so
Yep.
I think
I see.
there is that sense of even cyclical ownership, right? Like something comes back around and you're like, okay, well, apparently I didn't learn this lesson last time, so
Yeah.
I'm paying attention now.
I just read something that someone shared that was talking about it was talking about soulmates, but I think it's true regardless of whether you believe in soulmates or whether it's something that's not romantic at all. And it was saying that if someone you don't feel like you can let someone go, then something isn't finished there. And I think that can mean a lot of things. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're supposed to be with that person or that you're supposed to engage in relationship, friendship, whatever. But I've been noticing that when people specifically or situations come back around for me, there's it may not even be the same lesson, but there's some lesson to learn there. Do you have people like that in your life where you feel like, oh, this isn't over yet? Like, we don't talk anymore, we don't whatever. And it's not that I'm looking for resolution for this, but there something tells me like they're gonna come back around in some way.
Oh God, 100%. 100%. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's someone specifically I'm thinking about who has impacted me greatly. And I just know that it's been both positive and negative. And I just know that it's not over yet. Like, I don't even want to call it a relationship, but they're still in my life. And I interact with this person almost daily. And there's still this, I don't know, I almost feel, I don't want to give this person too much power, but I almost feel like they've been sent and placed in my life to help me work through some other abusive relationships that I've had in the past, if that makes sense. And so it's been mind warping for like to think of like the best term. But just when I think, okay, well, I don't have to deal with that person anymore, something else happens and they're back in my life. And so, and it's not even something in which I can like place a boundary around because of how they're in my life. And so it's just, I absolutely agree with that. It can be exhausting, but at the same time, I'm figuring out ways in which Danielle Laporte calls them boundaries, not barriers. And I just love that concept. And so I'm finding ways to still engage with this person in on a human level. Like recently they experienced some loss and I was able to reach out to them and be like, hey, I'm sorry about that in a genuine way. And I was the one reaching out to them. And in a normal circumstance, I would have that wall so thick in between me and that other person that any type of connection would be impossible. And so I've been trying to practice that, boundaries, not barriers, in a way that makes sense for how they are engaging with me right now.
Do you think that, kind of the healing work that you've done, learning yourself, practicing having those boundaries, not just there, but in other places, has given you the energy to be able to engage without allowing them to kind of take from that energy?
Oh, 100%. And I think pointing back to dreams. So this person, up until this past fall, so almost about a year ago, was, if you were to ask me about them, I would have said nothing but positive things.
Right.
But then I had a dream where this person had taken on almost wolf-like characteristics, and I saw an anger that I'd never seen before in this person. But I woke up thinking, holy shit, that's who that person is, not the person I see daily. That's the person. And it was just this really humbling moment for me because my interactions and my relationship with this person could have been totally different had I not had that dream. And I just kind of kept that kind of in my back pocket. And then about a month later, I was working with somebody, and she told me to, I had had an opportunity at work, and I missed out on it. I was overlooked. And she told me, she said, I think you need to ask where this hurts and why this hurts. And I took some time that day and just sat there and asked and kept asking and kept asking and kept asking until I got it. And all of the sudden, when I got my answer, it was like a film reel in my mind of this person and being groomed and being abused, so to speak, mentally, verbally, emotionally. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, that's why. Like, that's why this hurt so badly, was because it was, the veneer was taken off and I was finally able to see who this person was. And that always hurts when you realize, once again, for those of us who've dealt with this, once again, I had the target on my forehead and they saw me and I was their mark. And you have to kind of restructure the entire narrative of your relationship. And that once that happened, and I cried the hardest I've ever cried, probably in years. I approached this person completely differently. And it was, I could feel myself not only taking control of my own narrative with this person, but also with previous people, like people in my past. And so it was like in me standing up for myself with this person and continuing to engage with them in whatever relationship you would, or whatever type of relationship you'd call it now. I was also standing up to every other abuser. I was also standing up to every other person who'd taken advantage of me. And it was giving me more strength and more confidence to do so in the future as well.
Man, I that resonates with me. I had something similar happen recently, and it is so difficult when you see the reality of something as opposed to the story you've made yourself comfortable with in your head. And it's so, well, for me, I don't know if you experienced this, but in the past, it's been hard to remain open after that's happened, right? But I think just like beauty as defiance, I right now at this point in my life, I am practicing opening as defiance too, you know? I don't know, what has that experience been like for you, staying open,
That, I mean,
boundaries?
that's exactly how I feel with this person. Like, it's so funny because I have a group of girlfriends who know everything that's happened. You know, like they're involved as well. They see everything, and they do not they do not have a high outlook of expectations for this person. And and so it's kind of humorous because I can engage with this person or make decisions, and only they understand what's really happening. Like on the outside, everyone might perceive it as respect, or everyone might perceive it as our relationship is still pretty close, but they don't understand the thought process behind what I'm doing, how calculated I am, how intentional I am, and how aware. And so even though I'm open, as you said, it's a certain defiance to continue to engage and say, like I know you. You might not think I know you, but I know you. And I think in all the fairy tales, the woman is the one who tames the wolf. So I think I win in this story.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to girlfriends who are there for you, man, and who just like will say all the petty shit that you want to, but you feel bad about.
Oh no, 100%. That is them. We call ourselves the pleasant bitches, because of that very reason. Because we will speak the truth in our text thread and then smile and laugh with you in person. But it's, I think it's the, you need to have those markers, right? Of truth speakers who, because there are moments, there's still moments where I'll go to them and be like, what am I missing? What is happening here? And they're like, what do you mean? This is what's happening. And they like start listing things. I'm like, okay, cool, thanks. And yeah, it's, you have to have it.
You do. And I think maybe petty was like a misnomer just because I think that pettiness is kind of funny, but it's more of this sense of you're right, they have a clarity that you may not be able to have because you're too close to the situation, right? And they're willing to say things maybe that like truths, as you were saying, that you are too afraid to say, or that you just are too clouded over by your narrative to know they're there. So yeah, it's very true. I'm just thinking of this conversation that I had with my girlfriends a couple of weeks ago. When this man I'd been dating texted me to say, like very recently had been dating, texted me to say he was in another relationship.
Oh,
And
cool.
yeah, okay, thanks. I'm not gonna respond to this text because I don't need to. And also, and I'm talking to my girlfriends about it. And I'm trying to be like, kind and like wish him the best and all these other things. And they're just like, fuck that shit. But I feel like it's part of whether it's a romantic thing, whether it's a friend thing, platonic, whatever, work relationship, whatever it looks like. I think it's part of the healing process for you or the grieving process of what you thought that relationship was to be able to have external voices saying, okay, and also here's the reality of what we were seeing. So maybe realign your story that you have in your head about this person and what they've meant to you or what your experience with them was with the reality of what everyone else was seeing and experiencing.
I mean, honestly, that's it's what I know how powerful it is because it's holding up that mirror. And that is why I call it, like, they don't know this, but I'm like, they just essentially like story coached me because I'm like, this is the story. I don't understand what, and they're like, no, that is not the story. This is the story. This is what you said. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And so whenever that happens, like that moment, I've had that moment with so many other people, and they're like, how did you know that? And I'm like, well, because you told me. And it's being able to speak the story back to somebody is such a profoundly alchemic experience because we tell our story, and then they intake it, and then when
Yeah.
they turn it back and say it back to us, we get the sense of the patterns and that layer of truth and the veins that we didn't see before. And
Yes.
it's a really powerful thing if you can find people who do it well and who are in your
Yes.
circle. Yeah.
Yeah, and also I think I've been hearing you talk about in this way, and I don't know if you feel like you're really experiencing it, but I know I have been as well. We both do this for other people, but I think as we continue to heal, to love ourselves, to go deeper into that experience, we're able to do that more for ourselves. And then begin recognizing those patterns that we see pop up and saying, oh, hey, this is different than what I thought I was experiencing. Instead of just having outside voices say that to us, we're better able to listen to our own intuition and see the real story that's playing out, the real experience that's playing out.
Yes, absolutely. Part of my work that I do with people is helping them understand that before you can own your voice and find your voice as a writer and as a storyteller, you have to be able to own your story.
Yes.
And that's that what you just said is the primary reason, because you have to be able to speak into yourself in those moments where you might not have anybody else available. Not that they're just not there, it's just in those moments where you're in a conversation that you didn't expect, or like you need to be able to find that, the drawing a blank, the tuning fork, your
Yes,
internal
yes,
tuning
yes.
fork, to point you in the right direction.
Yeah, and also I think to kind of move you through the narrative of it, there's this Hannah Gadsby. I don't know if you watched Nanette, her special on. Yeah, God, that was so good. I followed through the whole thing, but she said this thing that I'm sure you have like you've heard and whatever you it stuck with you. But she said, "We learn from the part of the story we focus on," and that was just like a gut punch for me, right? Because I think that in understanding our narratives and moving through that, we have to learn from all the different parts of it. Instead of sometimes it's really easy to get stuck in one part, in replaying that trauma part over and over again, instead of moving through it. So.
Yeah, and that is why I started focusing on beauty. Not to
Yes.
belittle the trauma that happened to me, but to speak into my life for what I want in the future. So like
Yes.
if I am going to perpetuate something, if I'm going to perpetuate a narrative, I want it to be one of beauty. And
Yes.
so that's in my mind, that was kind of the intent I was setting forth. Like, regardless of what's happening around me, whether I'm walking, pacing the dock in North Carolina, scared because I'm afraid they're going to take my son away, I'm
Yes.
still paying attention to the way the waves are crashing around me. And I'm still paying attention to the sunrises and the sunsets and the way that he laughs and how my son, reacts to Russell, and like
Yeah.
these moments in a season of life that was incredibly triggering and completely devastating for so many reasons. It held so much beauty.
Yeah.
And when I look back on that moment, all of those moments, I'm able to see both. And I think that's a really important aspect of growth, to be able
Yes.
to see the whole story rather than just certain threads.
Yeah. Nothing is only one thing. It's always many layered, always multitudes. Well, as we kind of wrap this up, one thing I would love for us to do to end this conversation, if you're comfortable with it, is sharing an intention or a dream for some great beauty that you have for the future. And I would like to share that too. Would you be willing to share that with us, an intention that you have, a dream that you have for the future of some great beauty?
Yes, absolutely. So I've had this vision in my head for like at least 5 years, and It's me standing on a cliff at the ocean. I don't know which ocean it is. My husband and I have talked about moving to like Providence, Rhode Island, or like someplace in Oregon, but it's on a cliff somewhere and I'm watching the ocean. It's near my home. Our home is behind me. And it's also a retreat for women writers to come and be able to find their story, own it, have a safe place to be able to embrace it. And in one of my rooms that I have there in that house, it's a room that is floor to ceiling shelves of books that women have written because of being able to visit this place, and being able to get their story out and be able to share it. And so, I know it's gonna happen. I don't know when. I have this, it's kind of like I'm in my, I feel like I might be like in my late 40s, early 50s in the picture that I keep seeing. But that vision came to me probably around 5, 6 years ago. And it's just anytime I see the ocean, anytime someone talks about living by it, anytime I'm just in my office and like working, it'll pop up every once in a while and I'm like, yep, I know, I remember you. So yeah.
I love that. Wow. Yeah. That is going to happen. I believe that. I felt that as you were saying it. I was like, this is a true thing. This is a true thing. My intention and the beauty that I see that I want to manifest that I'm already beginning to move towards is similar in some ways, actually. It is also a piece of land, a home. That is near the ocean, but also near the mountains. And in my mind, I've been calling it Wilder Shores. And it's a space, it's a woman's place for women. It's a women's place. And it's a space where women can come and do work of healing, reconnect with themselves, reconnect with the earth, and just kind of explore that. And in my mind, as I see it, there are different spaces that I see around this kind of few acres or whatever of land. But I also see a space where, like, men can come and visit, but there are rules, right? There are rules like you can't touch a woman unless you have asked permission and she's expressly given it to you. Like little tiny things like that, like kind of up. An upheaval of the world as we know it, as we normally walk through it. And yeah, so I'm with you. I dream about it all the time. You know, I talk about my great love and one day meeting my great love, but honestly, I dream about this more than I dream about that. So yeah, absolutely.
I love it. So it is.
And so it is. Yes. Well, thank you so much. This conversation, I think, took us on a journey that I wasn't expecting, but it's so beautiful. And I think people are really going to resonate and appreciate it. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
All right. Take care.
All right, bye.
Thanks for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed the show. You can follow Elora at Elora Nicole on Instagram. And if you'd like to support the show, you can Venmo me at Melissa B. Hawks. Hope you have a great week. Love ya. Mean it.